This is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter. And this is one of those episodes that I think will really help people in deciding whether or not they want to have probably one of the most popular and well-known aesthetic treatments. We're talking wrinkle relaxers. The what, the how, the where, the why, everything is packaged up here in this one episode with a few words of advice from Dr. Sophie, like this.
If you start when there are no lines visible, it can actually have the reverse effect.
And here's a little teaser on something else we talked about.
I think it's important to stress that if you're looking for a natural look,
we also talk so-called trends.
I don't personally offer this as a treatment on my treatment list.
Along with a few of the wider issues.
We do also have a problem in the UK with black market products being imported that are not licensed or registered over here, and also fake products.
And if you're wondering what the experience is actually like, we cover that too.
I would say that the first time you have it, you often feel it kicking in.
So get ready to learn so much more. And if you're enjoying the content, please leave a little review on Apple Podcasts or tap on the 5 stars. We'd really appreciate that. Thank you so much. My name's Fiona Mattesini, and this is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter. So Sophie, wrinkle relaxers, and let's go right the way back to basics. In a nutshell, how do they work?
Wrinkle relaxers use a drug, a botulinum toxin, to relax the muscles that are responsible for causing lines and wrinkles. So this can be done to varying degrees, either to a point where you can't move these at all, or to a point where you're moving them less than you normally would. Mm-hmm. So that means that the lines and wrinkles soften, and also in a preventative way, they won't become as ingrained at rest as they otherwise would be. Mm-hmm. So in principle, it can be a little bit like pressing pause on this particular aspect of the aging process. But they also do quite a lot more than that. So there was a study that shows that botulinum toxin can boost levels of collagen in the skin while it's active. And it can also do lots of other things like treating migraines, teeth grinding, incontinence, excess sweating. We can also use it in lots of areas of the face where we're not actually relaxing a wrinkle, but we're treating a muscle. So for example, the neck bands, or lowering the lip line when someone has a gummy smile, or treating the masseter muscles for jaw grinding. So they can work in lots of different ways.
Mm. And can they be used on all lines and wrinkles?
This is something I see so commonly in clinic, because people come in and think that I can treat, for example, a nasolabial fold or a nose to mouth line with wrinkle relaxers, but we can't, because they're a more structural line. Wrinkle relaxers are great and very impactful when we're targeting dynamic wrinkles, so wrinkles caused by muscle movement. So common areas where we see those are the forehead or the frown area or around the eyes. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to treating static wrinkles, wrinkles that are there at rest, and often they're more due to collagen or loss of elasticity or sun damage, and sometimes in combination with movement as well. But then often other things like fillers might be a more suitable option.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the neck a moment ago. Would you use them on the body, and can you use them on the neck?
The neck, it's great for certain indications. Yeah. So particularly something called the platysmal bands, which run vertically down the neck. And there are indications for using wrinkle relaxant on the body, but not for treating body wrinkles. So, for example, we might treat them to help relax shoulder tension by treating the trapezius muscles, but I wouldn't use it for treating lines and wrinkles in the décolletage, for example.
Mm. Or the knees.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
There's other more effective treatments for those areas.
Okay. And can you also clear up some confusion? Do wrinkle relaxers prevent lines from forming or from getting worse?
Wrinkle relaxers will prevent lines from getting deeper, but the result does depend a little bit on what stage you come and have treatment for the first time and how ingrained your wrinkles already are. If you bear in mind, most lines and wrinkles do get deeper with age. If you start early enough, it may mean that you don't need quite as complex a treatment plan as you would if you then suddenly decided at an older age that you wanted to eradicate your wrinkles. Mm-hmm. But you also shouldn't start too young. There is a too early. So if you start when there are no lines visible, it can actually have the reverse effect. And if you have too much too fast, it can make you, in my opinion, look a bit older than you are. Mm. I would say that how we're using these treatments now is so much more nuanced than when they first launched. And wrinkle relaxers, when they first were used for aesthetics, were used in much higher doses. And in those situations, when you're having a lot, it can cause muscle atrophy, which is where the muscle actually wastes and becomes quite paper-like. Mm-hmm. And then you can get different issues caused by volume loss in the muscle. Mm-hmm. And we also have to think that as the muscles we're treating become weaker, some people start to recruit other muscles around that area. So a common one is the bunny lines on the nose that some people start to notice become stronger after they've had wrinkle relaxing around the eye area. And if you start to develop those, then you might need even more muscle relaxant treatment to relax those newly recruited muscles. Otherwise, they'll start to cause new lines. So It's a yes and a no. They do prevent lines from forming or getting worse in areas where you've treated, but perversely, they can also cause other lines to form.
Yeah. It's so good to have somebody being transparent about the whole thing. And actually, all of this reinforces the need to go to somebody who knows what they're doing, which we're going to get onto, because I know there are so many backstreet operations, and I know you feel strongly about this, and we both feel strongly about going to professionals. But anyway, We have a lot to get through. So let's move on to the experience. For somebody that's a complete newbie, what is the actual experience like?
The prep for the procedure is pretty minimal. Mm-hmm. You can make it even more minimal if you come to your appointment without any makeup on. Makes life a little bit easier, but it's certainly by no means mandatory. So many of my patients pop out during a lunch break to come to their appointments. Mm. So it's not something I insist on. We might ask you to pull some funny faces. So really getting you to frown or to lift your eyebrows so that we can assess your strength of movement and where your lines are distributed. Mm-hmm. Some injectors might also draw on you, like an eyeliner pencil, and these get rubbed off again after the treatment. Yeah. When it comes to the actual injecting, we'll clean the skin. Yeah. And then the needles themselves are so fine. So when people have this treatment for the first time, often their benchmark for something with a needle is having a blood test taken or a flu vaccine done, for example. And actually, these needles are so much finer than those. And we use them very precisely into target muscles. I'd say, obviously, pain levels do vary depending on how sensitive you are and also which area of the face the treatment's in. So around the eyes and around the mouth can be a little bit more sensitive than the forehead. Mm. And I'd also say for women, and I noticed this in myself, there are certain times of the month where I feel something more than I do at others. Mm-hmm. So hormones play a big role in our perception of pain. Mm-hmm. But most people find it really very minimally uncomfortable and describe it almost more as a bit of a sharp sting than anything else. And also, as soon as that needle is out of the skin, any discomfort is gone. So it's very short-lived. Yeah. I would say the injecting itself probably doesn't take any more in most cases, depending on your injector, than 5 to 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. But the appointments will usually be a bit longer than that. Okay. And then afterwards, it's always good to be prepared. You might have a few little lumps and bumps that usually disappear within an hour or so. Mm-hmm. Bruising can happen, like with any injectable treatment. Often people ask me whether they should apply arnica afterwards. But actually, once you've already bruised, arnica is not the most help. Mm-hmm. What I do find really impressive, though, is a post-procedure product by a brand called Elastin, a skincare brand. And this can speed up how quickly a bruise heals if you do get one. Mm-hmm. So I usually recommend that along with a good concealer. So even though these needles are tiny, and I would say the vast majority of my patients don't bruise, it can happen. Mm-hmm. If you look at the anatomy of the face, and you know, there are some very clever kind of 3D models of all the vessels in the face, I'm actually surprised we don't bruise people more often than we do. And if we do inadvertently clip one of those blood vessels or inject into it, it's nothing to be worried about. The worst that will happen is a bruise will form. Another thing to be aware of is that about a quarter of people get a headache after wrinkle relaxing injections. It's quite common. It usually resolves itself within about 24 hours, but you can take painkillers if needed. Mm-hmm. But for full transparency, for the very vast majority of my patients, by the time they leave my clinic, you really can't tell they've done anything.
Yeah, it's so good that you've enable people to actually know what happens from the moment they walk into clinic.
The experience does vary between injectors because we all have our own different ways of doing things.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily right or wrong. So long as you're with someone you trust, who's experienced, who you've done a thorough checkup on, then it doesn't matter whether they use pencil marks or don't, or whether they use one thing to clean the skin or another. So long as it's something that's effective, it's not an actual problem, the minutiae.
Yeah, so don't go saying, well, Dr. Sophie said you should be doing this, because as you say, as long as it's a reputable practitioner, everyone has their own way, but that for the most part, that's how the experience will be. So the big one, I guess people want to know, is what about the results? How soon and what's going to happen immediately as soon as they walk out the door?
So I guess the first thing to say is you don't see them straight away, because it sort of blocks the nerve from talking to the muscle. And so it relaxes that muscle movement. That process isn't immediate. Most people start to notice it happening over anywhere between 2 and 4 days. Although I have some patients who swear they notice the results from the following day. And the full result can take even up to 2 weeks to develop. Mm-hmm. I would say that the first time you have it, you often feel it kicking in. Mm-hmm. I certainly did, and most of my patients do. Some people describe it as a tightness. Other people feel it slightly heavy feeling. Mm-hmm. And this is your body reacclimatizing to not being able to move a muscle in the same way as it used to.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then over a period of months, the result of the treatment starts to wear off. So usually any time after around about 8 weeks, you can notice some movement coming back. And the average duration of results is 3 to 5 months. I would never retreat someone within 12 weeks of their original treatment. And that's to do with us minimizing the risk of people developing resistance to it. And it's a very small risk, but we know it's there. Dose is important. So the more you put in, the longer it will last. But it is also dependent on people's unique metabolism. And by saying that, I don't mean that more is more, because yes, I could put more in and you might find it lasts longer, but you could spend half of your treated time looking really frozen and unnatural and with very heavy eyelids. And so we have this kind of balance between the aesthetic result and the longevity. And that fine balance will vary a lot between individuals, and that's the artistry of it. There is also some data, there are some studies linking taking zinc supplements to increase longevity of treatment and potentially also it kicking in a bit quicker. So that's something you could explore taking for sure.
Okay. That's interesting. And when you mentioned the fact that people could have more, but they will look very unnatural, as you always say, and just to reiterate, that's not your signature style at all.
No. For me, it really is about no one should look at you and say, oh, you've had that done.
Yeah.
They should look at you and think how well you're looking. And it should be your best kept secret unless you want to share it with someone.
Perfectly put. Yeah. So what's baby Botox?
I would really say this is a marketing term. It refers to the use of smaller doses injected across a wider area. And the whole idea of it is to soften lines and wrinkles rather than to totally smooth them out and in principle give a more natural look. But I would say the result will just vary so much from individual to individual. You can use this same dose in two different people and get different results. I don't personally offer this as a treatment on my treatment list. I give patients the dose they need for the areas they're having injected and based on the result that they're wanting to achieve. And I base that on my assessment of them and their anatomy. I'll always educate them around it. And my aim is always to achieve a much more natural look with some movement. I think it's important to stress that if you're looking for a natural look, this is often where experience does come in, tailoring a treatment to you and your desired result is second nature to someone who's been doing this for a long time, who has a lot of experience. And sometimes when you are going to someone who's only just started out, they'll have been shown one way of doing things and a recipe that might be safe, but might not always give the best result in each and every individual. That kind of nuancing, the subtleties of treatment design come with experience.
Which again is why it's so important to go to a credible and experienced and qualified practitioner. It's so crucial. How do you know how much to give to someone, especially if they're nervous and it's their first time and they say, oh, look, please, I don't want to look different. I just want to look like a better version of me. How do you know how much to give someone if people do react differently according to their anatomy or their metabolism?
Do you know, it is hard because we are all different. Mm-hmm. And there are some people who catch you by surprise and they're much more sensitive than you expect. Mm-hmm. I examine them to begin with and then I think they're going to need a certain amount, and actually they end up needing half of that. Mm-hmm. So I always think when you meet someone for the very first time, or for me at least, I'm risk averse. I want someone to be delighted, and I know that I can add some more injections 2 weeks later if I need to. But once it's in, at least at the moment, although there is potential development in the pipeline for something that can reverse it, but we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. At the moment, once it's in, I can't take it out again. So I will always err on the side of caution, knowing that I can add more if I need to. So I like to just really see how each individual responds.
Yeah. And I should have said that to you, shouldn't I? That with the experience, when people leave, that they may well go back to you in 2 weeks or 3 weeks if they say, oh, can I have a little bit more? Because you can put more in, but you can't take it away yet.
On the first time I treat people, I insist on seeing them back 2 weeks later. I want to make sure that we're both delighted with the result and there's nothing that needs adjusting. And on future treatments, the way that I do it is my team will always touch base with every patient, usually around a week after their treatment, to find out how it's kicking in and how they're feeling about it. And if there's anything they're worried about, we then bring them into the clinic for a review.
Okay, so how often or do you ever advise clients against wrinkle relaxers?
I guess more often than you'd think. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's more to do with the fact that a patient is expecting a wrinkle relaxer to achieve more than it's going to. So I will often recommend wrinkle relaxers in conjunction with other things. So if someone has some static lines as well as the dynamic lines, we might use wrinkle relaxers in conjunction with, for example, filler. Or mm-hmm. I might use wrinkle relaxers in conjunction with something like Softwave to really help to open up the eye as much as we can. And the Softwave gives this stimulation of collagen production so that we can firm and tighten skin. It's brilliant around areas like the eyes and the lips, but we might combine it with wrinkle relaxers. Mm-hmm. And then there are sometimes people who just don't need it yet, or they're sitting on the fence and they're not quite sure yet. And I always say, you know, this isn't something that you have to do. Yeah. It's something that you choose to do at the time that's right for you.
Yeah. Is there anything that you'd recommend someone does before a wrinkle relaxing treatment?
So there's nothing kind of mandatory, but I would say if you're taking ibuprofen, for example, which is a painkiller that can thin the blood, try and avoid taking it for a couple of days beforehand if you can, because it can minimize your bruising risk. And I guess, again, around bruising, a big one is alcohol, because again, it really does thin the blood. So try and avoid it for at least 24 hours beforehand and 24 hours afterwards if you can. But if you can't, then the worst that will happen is a bruise.
Yeah.
So it's not anything more than that. Mm-hmm. I think some practitioners we find go even further and tell you to avoid taking fish oil supplements or omega-3s beforehand. Things like garlic, ginger, green tea, cinnamon, all of these different things, as they can also prevent clotting and increased bruising risk. Mm-hmm. It's also really important that you're always honest about your medical history and changes to it with your practitioner, because there are some antibiotics, for example, that can increase the potency of botulinum toxins. And so it's something, if your practitioner knows that, we can adjust for or delay treatment. Mm-hmm. But in general, there's no absolute must do's or must not do's beforehand. Mm-hmm. Just bear the things I've said in mind.
Yeah. And on the other side of the fence, what about your advice for aftercare?
So there have been so many myths about what you can and can't do after treatment.
Okay.
We used to tell people don't go and lie down for 4 hours or don't get on an aeroplane for the next day.
Right.
But actually, there's no evidence behind any of that.
Okay.
What I do always say is avoid touching your face, because your fingers are also really dirty. When you do touch your face for the next couple of days after treatment, be gentle with the areas that we've injected so that you don't spread the treatment around to other areas, and also that you don't cause a problem at the injection sites. Mm-hmm. There is some suggestion that some people and some practitioners will recommend that you go away and you frown a lot and you smile a lot and you use those muscles. And that can potentially help it to kick in quicker. But personally, I just find people feel a bit self-conscious if I tell them to do that. So I just say, be normal and forget that you've had it. Mm-hmm. You don't need to be still. You don't need to move a lot. Mm-hmm. I do also say, try and avoid going to the gym or doing intense exercise afterwards. Anything that makes us red in the face can increase your risk of swelling and bruising. So I would always say be cautious with that and avoid exercise on the day of treatment.
So don't touch your face, but at the same time, if people are cleansing at night, what would you say about that? And tacked onto that question, can people carry on using retinol and peptides? Because that's an interesting one. Peptides can work on muscles too, can't they? Can they use those straight after a wrinkle relaxing treatment?
You can cleanse, but I would always just cleanse gently. So don't go rubbing hard over the treated areas immediately afterwards and for the next couple of days. Mm-hmm. In terms of things like retinol, some people might say you should stop using it a couple of days before and for a couple of days afterwards. I just tell people to avoid using it on the day of injections because you're going to have these tiny little needle holes present that can make applying lots of actives a bit stingy. But personally, I don't advise stopping any other skincare or skincare protocols in advance, except for if we're using certain energy devices.
Okay, but peptides are okay.
Yeah, there are peptides, as we've talked about in other episodes, that help to relax muscles, but that's not a problem. These are working synergistically. And actually, products like the post-procedure product that I talked about earlier, the Elastin, that uses peptides. And absolutely, I would want you to go and put it on after a treatment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it true that toxins can wear off more quickly if you exercise several times a week?
Anecdotally, it can be possible. There is talk that people where their metabolism is very high, that or they have an overactive thyroid, that these treatments don't last as long. But we really don't have any evidence around this. And I would say I've seen people who exercise really regularly, whose treatments last well, and others who don't exercise at all, who don't get the longevity. So it just really does vary between individuals.
So what about, can you get filler and a wrinkle relaxer on the same day?
Yes, absolutely. Right. And we regularly do treat people with both on the same day. Mm-hmm. I might be careful if we're talking about the exact same area. But for example, I might treat people with cheek filler and then with some wrinkle relaxing in the same treatment session. I would tend to do the filler first because often with filler, I want to massage it a little bit afterwards and I don't want to massage the wrinkle relaxer. Mm. So I would do the filler first, make sure I'm very happy with that, and then inject the wrinkle relaxer afterwards.
Okay. And is there anyone who should avoid having wrinkle relaxers? I'm imagining pregnant women should avoid it.
Yep, absolutely. Pregnant and breastfeeding women. Now, there are lots of people who have accidentally had it while pregnant and not known about it. Mm. And there have been no reports of problems, but it's not tested as being safe. And so it's not a risk you would want to run. Mm. And there are also certain kinds of neuromuscular health disorders where it might not be advised. And so sometimes it's good to have a conversation with your general practitioner or hospital specialist. And the other thing I would say is there's no one who needs treatment to relax wrinkles under the age of 18. There are certain medical reasons why people would have them, but this isn't a treatment that teenagers should be thinking about.
Have you ever had a teenager approach you?
I haven't, but I know many people who have.
I hope they turn them away.
The ethical ones will, but unfortunately we have a problem where in England it is illegal to treat under 18s except in certain situations where there's a medical justification. And this is also with fillers, but it isn't the same in Wales and Scotland, for example. So there are teenagers crossing the border to have treatment underage.
Oh, that's just awful. Mm. And I imagine social media has got a lot to account for, but that's a whole nother episode, isn't it? Right, let's push on with this. What are the main challenges with wrinkle relaxers? Because let's be honest, they've been going for so many years, haven't they? But of course, I know that there will always be risk factors with anything like this.
Yeah, and actually, wrinkle relaxers are a very well-tolerated treatment, but things can happen. So one that people talk about is something called spocking, which is where the tail of the eyebrow sort of hooks upwards. And that's usually caused by underdosing at the sides of the forehead and is quite easy to rectify. So if that's something you notice, go back and see your injector. Mm-hmm. Maybe a bit trickier is when you have a really frozen forehead, and this can make the eyebrows very heavy. And this is caused by too much in the forehead muscles, or possibly if someone hasn't balanced the forehead treatment with treating the areas that also lift. And unfortunately for this, you generally just have to sit it out. It's a matter of patience. There's no way at the moment of reversing it, although there are companies working on this. And you should start to see it wearing off. Even though we talk about the results lasting between 3 and 5 months, many people find that actually that sort of very frozen, heavy look resolves a bit quicker than that. Mm. These sorts of things aren't as common with experienced practitioners. So it's not something I commonly see in my own clinic. And there are some people who request that type of very frozen forehead look, but that's not the look that I pride myself on. So for me, it should be about looking like the best version of yourself, not having had obvious treatment. Mm. And you know, there are other things that can happen with wrinkle relaxers. People talk about something called ptosis, which is when it spreads into the actual eye socket itself. And that's something that, again, with experienced practitioners is much rarer. The more common things are exactly the two I've just said, which are unsatisfactory results caused by either under or overdosing.
Okay. And is the overdosing the same as drop? What is a drop and why? What reason do people get a drop with their wrinkle relaxer?
Pretty much. It's, again, the forehead muscle, the frontalis muscle. A lot of people who approach a clinic for treatment in this area do it because they have forehead lines. And that's often a sign that they're raising their eyebrows a lot to lighten the weight of their forehead. Mm. And so if you relax that too much with wrinkle relaxing, it can make them heavy. When actually, a lot of the time, possibly thinking about fillers in the upper face to restore volume loss and improve that framework is a more effective solution, or looking at skin boosters. It's not as simple as thinking, I have forehead lines, I should have wrinkle relaxation. Have an assessment. So much about getting satisfactory results comes down to you being assessed properly for yourself.
Can having wrinkle relaxers around the forehead or crow's feet cause bags under the eyes or make under eye bag creases worse?
So when we get under eye puffiness, I guess, it's usually to do with impaired lymphatic drainage around the eyes. Mm-hmm. Now, we all depend on this contraction of orbicularis oculi muscle to drain fluid from around the eye area. And if you over-relax that muscle, then you don't get this kind of pump action that squeezes the fluid along the lymphatic vessels. And so you can get quite puffy under the eyes. Some people just have sluggish lymphatic drainage, and some people can develop sluggish lymphatic drainage because they've been overtreated with muscle relaxants. Mm-hmm. For many people, they may also find that they get slight puffiness around the upper eyelid, although I would say I see it more often in the lower eyelid. So it's always worth having a look to see if it's upper and lower or just one or the other. Mm-hmm. But the good news is, if it is related to the toxin treatment, it will wear off. It's just a matter of a bit of patience. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, there isn't a permanent treatment. So I always say gentle lymphatic drainage massage, and you can look this up on YouTube and you'll find people showing you techniques, or having a professional treatment are good options. But if you're going to have a go yourself, just apply a light eye cream, and remember that the lymph node drainage is always at the side of the face. So mm-hmm. you sort of need to draw the fluid in that direction to help it drain away. Mm-hmm. And you can encourage that mechanically, because the muscles aren't doing it for themselves at that moment. Mm-hmm. You might also find cold compresses or things like, if we're talking about DIY methods, cold spoons can help. Mm. And most of us find we're puffier in the face in the mornings because we've been lying horizontally. So if you can sleep slightly head up, it can help, just with an extra pillow, because mm-hmm. it helps gravity move things in the right direction. And if it's something that's happening, do think about whether there are things with your lifestyle that you can change. So staying well hydrated, minimizing your salt intake, those are quite simple things that people can do.
Yeah. Okay. And are there any more serious risk factors that people should be aware of?
Generally, wrinkle relaxers are really considered to be safe. They've been around for a really long time now, and were used before being used aesthetically for medical indications like treating spasm of the eyelid. And that's where the famous Dr. Jean Carruthers was using it. She and her husband discovered the aesthetic uses of this medication. Mm-hmm. So it can be used for spasms around the eye and for treating squints, and has been used for those indications for much longer than it has for aesthetic reasons. Mm-hmm. And we have a long time of data collection now in aesthetics as well. The main risks aren't usually from the drug itself, but usually from unqualified or inexperienced people delivering it. Yeah. Complications do happen, but usually it's to do with it being injected in the wrong place or in the wrong way, or to do with migration of the product, and that can happen. But again, in experienced hands and with a good knowledge of anatomy, it is much less common. And I will just reiterate again, make sure you find a skilled practitioner who's registered with a medical body. It's important to remember that we're talking about prescription medications here, and there are regulations around the prescribing of wrinkle relaxing, and it has to be done by a prescriber who has seen you in person. That can't be done on the phone or online. It has to be an in-person consultation where that prescribing happens. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important thing for people to remember. It's very easy to train in the UK as an injector.
Really?
I wish I could say otherwise, but yes, mm-hmm. the regulation is sorely lacking and we've got so many ongoing issues. Mm-hmm. Generally, I would signpost people towards BCAM or the BACN. So these are the British College of Aesthetic Medicine or the nursing equivalent. And they're really good places to find reputable practitioners. To be on their registers, practitioners have to have gone through certain screening processes. Oh, I guess one other thing to touch on, and I touched on it a bit earlier, is resistance. And actually, true resistance is very rare. It happens when your body develops antibodies to it. I've seen one case in my career, and it was from someone who ended up having too frequent treatment through the coronavirus pandemic because they kept having top-ups at inappropriate times. But often, you know, we might try a different brand, and sometimes people then respond better to a different brand. If it's true resistance, then none of the brands of botulinum toxin type A are going to work. And it's usually a matter of taking a complete break for a few years before we are brave enough to try again.
Okay. So you mentioned brands. So Botox is the one we've all heard of. But there's also Dysport, Bocature, Xeomin, Bisturbel, Azula, Nociva, Letivo, Daxxify, which is apparently coming soon. These are all other brands, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. There's many different brands and there are differences between all of them, usually in the way that the basic botulinum toxin is the same, but they're all complexed differently. And really, I would say it's important to use a brand that is evidence-based, because we do also have a problem in the UK with black market products being imported that are not licensed or registered over here, and also fake products. So I would always say be cautious. The ones that you've listed off are all reputable brands with their own data. And I always say finding a good practitioner who is experienced in the use of a particular product is the most important thing. Yeah. It's not about you saying, I would like this particular brand. Mm-hmm. It's about trusting that you're with someone who knows how to use that product best.
Yeah. And can you talk about the brand that one influencer describes as quote unquote clean, because it apparently doesn't have any additives?
Yeah, I know the brand and the influencer you're talking about. And some people refer to it as naked because it's been manufactured in a way that means it hasn't got these complexing proteins. But I don't see this as clean. It doesn't mean that the result is better. It doesn't mean that there's lower risk of resistance. As I mentioned, that risk is vanishingly low regardless. And so there's absolutely no evidence behind that theory. It's all, unfortunately, marketing spiel and influencer hype.
I thought you might say that, but it's always good to check. So most of the injectors that win awards and have the best reputations are, let's be honest, in London. And I want to say congratulations on your many awards, including recent awards, once again, from Vogue, Tatler, Harper's Bazaar. If somebody listening isn't in London or even in the UK, because I know we've got a global listenership, which is amazing, let's stay in the UK to keep things simple. What advice would you give to them when it comes to finding an injector?
Some of the publications that you've just listed do list people outside of London as well, because there are excellent injectors in many different parts of the UK and all over the world. But most importantly, look at their qualifications and their credentials. Make sure they're medically qualified and that they have those appropriate credentials. Now, experience is also important, not just how many years they've been doing it, but are they doing this as a full-time dedicated career, or is this just a bit of a side hustle for them? Because people could have been doing it for 10 years and done two patients every month, or they can have been doing it for a year and been seeing patients 5 days a week.
Yeah.
So experience rather than number of years. This medical background for me is really important. The ability to prescribe a medication, and particularly in the case of complications, should they arise. So many of the problems that can happen from treatments need prescription medications to address them. And also, people from a medical background will generally have more experience in dealing with problems and spotting when there is something wrong. Mm-hmm. Have a look on their website, look at any photos, but also check out social media. Have a feel for that practitioner's ethos. If you're looking for subtle and natural, and their photos are more along the lines of, I guess we could call it a Love Island look, then they might not be the right fit for you.
Yeah.
And also have a look at their prices and do think about whether you can afford ongoing treatments. When we're looking at wrinkle relaxers, you're looking at 3 to 5 monthly duration. So you're going to need to be seeing people anywhere between 3 and 4 times a year, really. So you do need to think if this is something that you can manage to maintain, but also remember that cheaper isn't better.
Yeah.
When something's too cheap, it's usually a warning sign for me.
Mm-hmm.
And think about transparency. If someone's going for a more natural look, you're not going to get the same longevity as someone who's having a very heavy dose. And so it's important a practitioner is discussing all of this with you up front, that when we're treatment planning, we talk to you about how long we expect things to last. And I also think checking out if someone has insurance is important.
Mm.
I never mind if someone asks me these questions. I actually welcome it because it shows someone's doing their due diligence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your practitioner should be a collaborator in helping you achieve your goals and not dictate your goals to you.
Mm.
And I also think it's about having a more holistic 360 approach. You don't want your practitioner to be obsessed with removing every single line and wrinkle, but looking at things like your skin tone and making sure that your face is harmonized, that the lower and the upper halves marry one another,
mm.
and that your lifestyle also means that you'll be able to maintain these sorts of results.
Mm.
You want to really trust that they're looking at you and assessing you and listening to you properly.
And I think we discussed this on our episode on the emotions around having treatments last year, when we talked about the fact that some people will invest in fashion or in holidays or in cars. And so I also guess it would be important to state that nobody should judge anyone for where they invest their money.
Exactly. It's your personal choice.
Yeah, that's it. So another question is, and this is another thing that I think comes up online, if people stop using wrinkle relaxers, will all the wrinkles suddenly come back? And what might happen if they suddenly just stop?
If you stop having these treatments, your muscles will regain their strength,
mm-hmm.
and it will go back to having movement in a way that, you know, if you've been having treatment for 10 years, you're not going to be used to seeing that. And also your skin will have changed over those 10 years. So you might find you look like you have more lines and wrinkles than you did beforehand, but that's because your skin has also continued to age.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it just depends on how long you've been doing it for as to what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
If you've only done it once or twice, you'll revert back to your baseline very quickly. But if you've been doing it for years, it could take longer for those muscles to return to the strength they used to be. But you might find that things do look different when they do.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, I find if they've been having it for a really long time, they've sort of almost trained their muscles out of moving. So particularly with frowning, I find that's quite a common thing where people find they just don't frown in the way they used to anymore.
Mm.
It just will at some point return to how it would have been.
You just imagine that during COVID, I suspect a lot of people went, what about my treatment plan? Because obviously that changed everything. Gosh.
For sure. I was thinking about what alternatives I could recommend and how I could help people do as much as they could at home. It was an interesting time.
Oh, it sure was. My goodness me. Okay, so any final thoughts?
Yes, wrinkles can make us look older and they are part of skin aging, but they're not the be all and end all. It comes down to so much more, like the skin tone as well. There was a paper published in 2008 that showed that when you remove the wrinkles from a photo, a person is perceived as being 10 years younger than they really are. But when you remove the wrinkles and even out the pigmentation, the person's perceived as being 16 years younger or almost 16 years younger. So it really is important to realize it's not just about one treatment. No matter how good that one treatment is, combining modalities and techniques and thinking about your face holistically is really important and will help to optimize results.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I said it earlier, but more is not always more. It really is about softening those lines. We don't want them to become as deep or as etched in as they may otherwise have been. But when people do overuse them, either because they want to make it last longer or because they want that really smooth foreheaded look, that isn't going to help you look like the best version of yourself. It is going to make you look different and your treatment almost certainly to look obvious. So really thinking that it doesn't just come down to that one thing of wrinkle relaxing treatments. Yeah. Holistic approaches that look at you as a 360, as a complete person and more important. And they can be so amazing when they're used in the right way by an experienced and trained practitioner. And I think as a final point, no treatment can substitute for your lifestyle. So sleep, skincare, sunscreen, and not smoking. I think those are the most important things to remember when it comes to skin health.
So many people will be really grateful to have a catch-all episode where everything is in one place like this. So brilliant. You really are the queen of knowledge. I'm really, really grateful. I know other people will be as well. So Dr. Sophie, thank you.
Thank you, Fee.
And that ends our podcast. If you want to explore more of what we talked about, simply head to the show notes. We've done all of the research and noting down of names, ideas, any studies we mentioned, so you don't have to go digging. To be ahead of the latest episode, press follow on Apple Podcasts. That's the little cross on the top right. Or simply hit follow on Spotify or whichever podcast app you use. Also, do follow Sophie on Instagram and TikTok. There's loads of great content and little explainers on there. Search for Dr. Sophie Schotter. Finally, if you're close to London or Kent, you can book a consultation with Sophie and find out more about who she is and the range of treatments and services she offers via drsophieschotter.com. And by the way, there's some great blog content on the website too. My name's Fiona Mattesini. On behalf of myself and Sophie, please do take a moment to rate and review the show. It all helps. And of course, thanks for listening.